Taped from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey geek out and nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
Hey, John, how's it going?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing, Darren?
Nice. I was trying to think of something clever to say, and that's all I got.
Well, this bodes well.
Yeah.
This bodes well. So, sure because SNL is off this week.
And next week,
we decided to do a big old theme show.
Yeah, and when we came up with the idea for this theme, guys, this... The joy that came into our eyes and in our hearts was just unparalleled.
And we don't have much joy in our lives.
Oh, Lord, no.
We are miserable bastards.
It's all doom and gloom.
But
a rain cloud follows us wherever we go.
Yes, we're very Charlie Brown in that way.
Yes.
But we decided one of the things that gives us joy in our life, one of the few things, is the Marvel movies, the
yes.
MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, my Lord in heaven, they do.
And as you might have heard, they've got a big movie opening up.
The small indie.
Yeah, called Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
Which is the end of their Phase 3 and the big climax. It's going to resolve the cliffhanger from Avengers Infinity War from last summer.
Yeah, I genuinely don't. I mean, we're days away from this movie coming out. This is the most anticipated movie probably of the year. Definitely of the year, I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe the Star Wars, maybe, but this is definitely, I think people are looking more forward to this.
Yeah.
And I genuinely don't know how it's going to end.
It's going to be interesting. And this is going to be a special two-part episode where we're talking all about the various Marvel actors who've hosted or made cameo appearances on SNL.
Yes.
And some of the Marvel sketches that they've done.
Yes.
And there have been a few.
Oh, there have been. Yeah, way more than I thought, I realized.
Yeah, yeah. We made a list of all the people, and we came up with a whole bunch. And we had so many, we were like, we should make this a two-parter.
Absolutely.
So consider this the Avengers Infinity War.
Right.
Next week will be the Avengers Endgame.
Right.
But because we were taping both of these episodes back-to-back.
Let them bind the curtain here.
Well, I just want to assure people that because we're taping this before the movie is open, neither one of us has seen the movie, so there will be no spoilers about Avengers Endgame.
Spoiler free.
So if you're concerned about that, you don't need to be.
Not at all. We are clueless.
If we reveal anything about the movie, it will be purely by accident.
If I say something now, and it turns out to be true in the movie, like, you'll be shocked, I'll be shocked, I'll go out and buy a lottery ticket that day.
Yes. It will be amazing.
Yes, because apparently I will be clairvoyant.
But that's something that we're really looking forward to. That's one of the things that Darren and I regularly do together. We get together with our friend and fellow comic, Matt Jenkins.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt. And his fiancée, Amy, and Darren's wife, and sometimes Darren's sister.
Yeah, yeah.
They join us, and we go out and we see the Marvel movies together.
We do. Now, John, I know you're more of a DC fellow.
Generally, yes.
So, I mean, I'm sure you remember way back in when the first Iron Man movie came out, the first Marvel movie, I guess it was like 2008 or something?
2008, yes.
Okay, like, what were your thoughts on it? What did you think of it? Like, I mean, were you looking forward to it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the first Iron Man movie, I remember it had this killer trailer, and that really created a buzz about it.
Right.
And when they cast Robert Downey Jr.,
yeah.
I thought that was really interesting.
Because,
I mean, he was a cool actor. He was due for a comeback. He'd gotten his shit together.
Right.
And it was also very interesting because the character of Tony Stark in the comics has a history of substance abuse.
Yeah.
One of the most famous Iron Man storylines is something called Demon in a Bottle, where he struggles with alcoholism.
Wow.
And they haven't done that in a big way in the movies, but they've alluded to it.
Yeah, like literally almost in every scene in Iron Man, he's drinking.
Yes.
And in Avengers and in
Iron Man 2, he's outright drunk at his birthday party.
Yes. And Iron Man 3, he drinks a lot.
He does.
It's one thing you don't even notice till you like look for it. You're like, wow, he drinks a lot.
The movie Tony Stark, I think you could safely say is a functional alcoholic.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair.
And I don't think they're ever going to go further with that because, I mean, what are you going to do? You're not going to do like Leaving Las Vegas with superheroes.
Oh, Lord. That is dark.
That would, yeah. I mean, you can't do it in a big way in the context of a big summer blockbuster. So
that's an indie hit right there.
Yes, yes.
Wow. All right,
that could be an interesting sketch though.
Maybe that SNL. That's for you. That we're giving out knowledge there with that one. All right, and also I remember when I first saw the Iron Man movie. That was the first time I ever saw like the post credit scene which turned out to be a big thing throughout all the Marvel movies.
Right, right.
That's like the first time, like, where you see, I think I heard somebody say, oh, you stay after the credits, stay after the credits.
Right.
And there's this whole thing, and then we stayed, and then Sammy Jack comes up with an eye patch, and we're like, oh, what's up with the Avengers Initiative, my man?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think we really knew where that was leading at the time. It was just sort of a neat Easter egg.
Yeah. At the time, I was like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before, really.
Because before that, like, the rule in comic book movies was always each movie was sort of a world unto itself.
Yeah, it's its own thing.
Like, I remember in Batman Forever, there's like a throwaway line where Bruce Wayne is like, oh, the circus must be halfway to Metropolis now. And you're like, oh, Metropolis, that's where Superman lives. Oh. Wah, wah, wah. and that was like, that was the most we had to hope for crossovers.
Yeah.
But Marvel, when they started producing their own movies, they got the rights back to all these characters.
Right.
And then I think Marvel looked at all the characters and they were like, hey, most of these characters are like the core of the Avengers. We could tie these all together and then eventually make an Avengers movie. And
it's weird. No one ever thought to do that before. Or maybe they have and they just weren't able to pull it off.
I think if they just couldn't do it before because usually these characters were licensed out to different studios.
Makes sense.
You know, like Paramount would be producing this one, Universal would be producing that one, Sony had the Spider-Man and.
Right. Like 20th Century Fox. With the X-Men and Sony.
Exactly.
Sony had Spider-Man and all that.
Right, right. So, I mean, it was just not logistically possible.
Yeah, that's true.
But now, it's the sky's the limit. And I think it's just so amazing. They've done all these movies. Most of them are very, very good to excellent. I mean, even the worst Marvel movie is at least watchable.
Yeah, very much so.
I think.
All right, well, hey, let's get into this. What are your top... let's say top three Marvel movies. No particular order.
Man, it's tough to come up with a list because I like
all
of them to some degree.
Some of your favorites.
I think the first Iron Man was wonderful. I think the first Avengers movie, that's still one of my favorites.
Yeah, that really surprised me when I saw it. I mean, I saw it because I'm a huge Joss Whedon fan.
Yeah.
Like, my sister is a bigger one. She's the one that got me into Joss Whedon and Buffy and Angel, Firefly and all that stuff. So I went mainly to see it because it's a Joss Whedon joint.
Right.
And then I walked away. I was like, wow, I got a feeling like I was seeing something I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
It was something, I know, it's like, this is special. And it really blew me away.
Yeah, and it was really interesting because you can make good individual movies with the characters and they're good in and of themselves, but that was the first one where they really mashed up a bunch of them.
Right.
And all the characters were cast pretty well and all of them were good actors and they all seemed to get along genuinely in real life and they had chemistry together on screen.
Yeah, absolutely. And like everybody got their own little moment to shine in that movie.
Yeah.
Like no one over, like there was, it wasn't an Iron Man movie. It wasn't a Captain America movie. Like it was like everybody's movie.
Yeah, yeah. It was a true ensemble.
Yeah, and that's the word, ensemble. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think that was amazing. So I like that first one a lot. The first Avengers one a lot, just for what it accomplished there.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Winter Soldier, of course. Like that really surprised. That was a great movie. Like,
yeah, Winter Soldier's great. I really liked the Spider-Man Homecoming. I thought Black Panther was great.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange, I think, is a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Civil War, I'm a huge fan of. When Ant-Man gets all big and like throws that plane around, I'm like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
What a time to be alive.
It really is amazing. And they've done, like, at this point, I think 22 films over the last 11 years.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And
it's one of those things I didn't realize, like, oh, wow, we get like three movies a year.
So, it's nuts, right?
Like, and I'm from a time where we didn't get that. We got like Batman, and then that was pretty much it for superhero movies until Batman Returns or whatever.
Yeah, you'd be lucky if you'd got a trilogy with one character, one set of actors.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, the James Bond movies, they took like, I think 40 years to make 20 movies,
something,
and Marvel did it in about a decade.
Yeah, and now we get like three Marvel movies a year, and like a couple of DC movies a year.
Yeah,
this is nuts.
It's an embarrassment.
It's madness.
I mean, I remember when I was young, like whenever there was a TV or movie adaptation of a comic book character, you were like, oh, I have to support this, so they make, you know, even if it was a comic book I didn't read, like there was a Generation X TV movie in the mid 90s that I remember.
I don't even remember that.
And I never read the Generation X comic, but I was like, oh, I still have to watch this because I want to support.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they make so many, you don't have to watch them. It's not possible to watch them
I mean, unless you're like unemployed and you have nowhere to go and nothing to do.
Right.
It's just.
And even then it would be tough.
Even then it would be tricky. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, bathroom breaks and whatnot.
What are your favorites? What about you?
I mean, Black Panther is up there.
Your wife went nuts for Black Panther.
Oh, my God. We saw that on the Thursday night, and my wife was like, this is incredible. Like, it's just because it was something we never thought we'd see before. Just like, superhero, predominantly black cast, and just this character that, like, not many people knew much about, and it was just, like, amazing. It was a deep story, as some great action. I mean, it had it all.
Yeah.
And, like, the fact that Marvel's able to do this with, like, secondary characters or characters that people, that even comic book nerds aren't too familiar with.
Right.
Is amazing. Like, when Guardians of the Galaxy, very few people knew about Guardians of the Galaxy. Even, like, people who are, like, super into comic books were like, Guardians, I don't think I ever heard of that.
Yeah.
And, like, they made it into, like, a better movie than, like, the Justice League movie. How is that possible?
A talking tree and a talking raccoon made it to the screen before Wonder Woman.
I mean,
that's both amazing and kind of sad for Wonder Woman's part.
I'm about to faint. I just can't. I mean, and Doctor Strange, another one. Mm-hmm. Like, not a lot of people knew about Doctor Strange. Ant-Man, not a lot of people knew about Ant-Man, but they were able to make them into these great movies, and it's just a thing of beauty.
The cool thing is that Marvel has become its own brand name, and that name is enough to, like, sell a movie.
Yeah, very much so. Like, same thing. Like, once I see it's a Marvel movie, I'm like, all right, there's a good chance it'll be good.
Yeah.
Like, there's a good chance it won't be total basura, as the Spanish people say.
Ooh.
That's right. I'm
getting bilingual.
I took a class in high school.
Okay.
I know a thing or two about a thing or two.
So what are your other favorites? I feel like we cut you off there.
No. I mean, my top three would, first Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd go with Black Panther. These are no particular order. Avengers, Black Panther. And it might be a tie between Civil War and Winter Soldier.
Okay. Good list.
Yeah, I would say that's about right. And I really like the second Guardians of the Galaxy. A lot of people think the first one better than the second.
I like the second one better, too.
Thank you!
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The first one, the first Guardians was, I wasn't as rapturous about it as most people were. It was a little too tongue-in-cheek for me.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed the second one a lot more. Maybe, I don't know if that was because I knew more what to expect from it.
Right.
Or if I just thought it was a better put together movie. I'd have to see that one again, really.
Yeah. Oh, and the Thor movies. I mean,
Ragnarok.
Ragnarok.
So much fun.
Yeah, it's so weird how that started off like very, like, you know, Shakespearean and a little bit Elizabethan. Shakespearean, you know, the first one was directed by Kenneth Branagh. And then at the end, the third Thor movie gets all goofy, silly, almost like the Guardians.
But it also went like totally Jack Kirby cosmic.
Yes, and very much so.
It was so much fun.
The tone switched in that so much. I mean,
I mean, because I think most people would put Thor the Dark World down towards the bottom of the list.
It's a
perfectly fine movie.
Yeah.
It just didn't blow anybody away.
Yeah.
And then Ragnarok comes along and it's just, whoa.
It's such a different movie.
Yeah.
Such a different tone. I think that was around the time people realized that Hemsworth could do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, he's funny. And let's comedy him up a bit.
I still think like Hemsworth is one of the best castings they've had in the MCU, because it's like they found a guy who's like well over 6 feet, he's tall, he's muscular, he's handsome, and he can actually act. Because like if they made a Thor movie in the 90s, it would have been Fabio.
Oh,
can you imagine that?
Don't say that.
It's really, can you imagine living in that world?
I feel I don't think
dystopia.
It would have been I don't think it would have been Fabio. Maybe Brad Pitt in a wig.
Yeah,
or who else? Keanu Reeves in a wig.
I don't want to live in any of those worlds.
Josh Hartnett in the wig?
A lot of wig.
A lot of
stuff
wig.
Going on.
A lot of wig. Yeah, the wig budget would have been all over the place in that one.
But anyway, like we thought it would be fun to talk about what these actors have done on SNL over the years. And I mean, a lot of them in the more recent years. So this episode, we were going to talk about the Core Avengers.
Yes, Core Avengers.
So, which is basically Chris Evans, who has not hosted the show.
No.
Mark Ruffalo, who has not hosted the show.
Mm-mm.
Chris Hemsworth.
Who has it twice? I didn't realize he did it twice in the same year.
Twice, yeah. Not in the same season, but in the same calendar year.
Okay, in calendar year.
In March and December of 2015.
Wow, you just got right off the top of your head with that.
I looked it up. I put it in my notes.
Well done.
Scarlett Johansson, who is
five-time?
In the Five Timers Club.
Yeah.
And Samuel L. Jackson.
Who hosted in, 98, January of 98.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And Robert Downey Jr., November 96.
Okay. And then also Jeremy Renner.
Renner, yes. Well, you talked about that one, like, off mic for, maybe on mic, too.
Maybe. I can't remember. But.
Okay. But, yeah, we have some stuff to say about that one.
So those are the folks we're going to talk about on this episode. And, of course, there's a longer list. We're going to hit a lot of the other people in the next episode.
Right.
We did decide, because both Idris Elba, Heimdall, and Don Cheadle, who is Rhodey, War Machine, they both hosted SNL for the first time earlier this season.
Right.
And we've covered both of those episodes. So we're just going to mention them. Yeah. And if you want to hear more about them, please go back and listen to those episodes.
Go back into the archives.
That's right.
Okay, so let's get into it. Let's start off with the main dude, Robert Downey Jr., when he hosted in 96. It was interesting. Like, I don't know if you saw... and by the way, all the sketches we're going to talk about, you can find them on YouTube or the SNL app or NBC Saturday Night Live page.
Yes.
So, I don't know if you saw it, but like, so I started off with the monologue.
I didn't really watch his monologue.
The monologue was very interesting. So, he basically came out and said, "Hey, how's everybody doing? How was your summer? I had a few interesting things happen to me." And
is this when he was like still getting arrested?
Yes, it was. So he said, I brought some slides from my summer. And he showed some slides of like, this is me barbecuing.
Uh-huh.
And it's him in front of a grill in an orange prison jumpsuit.
Wow.
In handcuffs with a prison guard right next to him.
Wow.
Yeah, he dove into it. And it's like, oh, and this is me with my, with my pharmacist getting some prescription drugs, and it's of course him buying a brick of cocaine from some guy in an alley.
Wow.
Yeah, it was basically that, just like him, you know, dressed in prison fatigues and handcuffs, and just him making fun of all the craziness.
That's cool of him to make fun of himself like that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a good sense of humor about himself.
Yeah, he really dove into that one. I was like, I was kind of surprised. And of course, it was like, at the end, he said, what is a summer with that little summer romance? And of course, it's him in prison with some big black dude putting the moves on him. Yeah.
They went there. Yeah. Okay.
96.
Prison rape in the monologue.
That's right. 96. It was a different time.
What was he promoting? Was he like... Do you recall? Was this during the Ally McBeal years?
Possibly. I mean, this was November 96.
That's a little early for Ally McBeal. I don't know.
Yeah, it might have been. Oh, and there's also a scene, which it took me a while to get, but they showed one slide of a crashed up car, and it was like, oh, whoa, how did that get in here? That's from Kelsey Grammer's summer.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Yeah. 96 was an edgy year.
Phew. Well, we're glad that both of those gentlemen are still with us and that they have apparently worked through all their problems.
Yeah.
And because they're both very talented and entertaining guys.
Yes, very much so. And there weren't too many sketches I was able to find online from this episode, but the main one I found was the Cobras and the Panthers.
Love that. I rewatched that one.
Yeah.
That is one that is near and dear to my heart. This is basically a parody of West Side Story.
Yes.
Where they're the street gang in the 50s, and so they've all got the 50s dues.
Yeah, Chuck Taylors and slick back hair.
Yeah, and the button-down shirts with the sleeves rolled up.
Yeah.
So they're tough guys. They got the cigarettes behind their ears.
Some real no-goodniks.
And the they're a street gang called the Cobras.
Right.
And they discover that the Panthers have, like, roughed up one of them, so they decide to go get them.
Right.
And RDJ breaks into a song about... You know,
when you're a cobra, you're a cobra all the way. Yeah.
Like
West Side Story song and dance. And then, of course, Norm McDonald, who's like the leader of the gang, is like, what the hell was that?
How'd you come up with a song so fast? That was like you rehearsed it. What? And I mean, everybody else is in the musical world. And then Norm is the one guy who is not. And it's hilarious. Look up this sketch, just SNL Cobras and Panthers.
Right, and at one point, Robert Downey Jr., he's the first one to start singing, but then he goes into another song, then Will Ferrell joins in, and then they start singing.
Yes.
And, you know, Norm looks even more befuddled, like, how'd you guys do that? That's Like, how'd you come up with that song? And Will was like, yeah, and I, like, he just started singing, and I just started singing.
Yeah, it just came to us. I don't know.
And then
he's like, well, I got a song for you.
Yeah.
It calls, while you were singing, I got stabbed in the head by a Puerto Rican.
Wow.
Which, I'm sorry, that line is just funny.
It's just, ay. You know that one, Puerto Rican?
And then we finally have the other street gang come up, the yep. Panthers.
Who's, yeah, of course, it's Tim Meadows with straightened hair.
Tim Meadows playing Puerto Rican, and then a bunch of extras because
yeah.
It was the 90s, and SNL did not have that many ethnic people in the cast.
What? You don't say.
And then they're getting ready to rumble, but everybody's coming out from behind him doing like those Jerome Robbins dance moves from West Side.
Jerome Robbins?
Who's that's right. I'm tossing out the name of West Side Story's wow. choreographer.
Hi,
that's how I roll.
You didn't even have that written down, dude.
I did not.
That's off top of the dome.
That's right.
But yeah, so then it's everybody saying, you know, we're the Cobras.
The Panthers.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes this big dance party.
Yeah, and then Norm just walks away exasperated. Like, yeah.
Very funny sketch.
Yeah, yeah, I dig it. Go check it out if you can.
And I did not check out any sketches from when RDJ was a cast member in the 80s.
We can skip.
I watched like maybe 2 minutes of something he did with Nora Dunn where they were reviewing Top Gun, and I was like, I don't think I need to watch
it's not up to... He's... I don't know.
Because like, it was infamously one of SNL's bad seasons.
The Dick Ebersole years.
It was the first year when Lorne came back to the show.
Oh, after the Dick Ebersole years.
Just after the Dick Ebersole years.
Post-Ebersole.
So it was like 1985, 86.
Post-Dick.
And yes.
Yes.
And Lorne hadn't quite found his footing again yet.
Yeah. There was one sketch where like Robert Downey Jr., he's like in a suitcase and his head's sticking out.
Yeah, that's supposedly a very infamous sketch, and
yeah,
I think I tried to watch it once, and I got about a minute into it.
It's very weird. Like, it's,
yeah.
It's like abstract art, like performance art in a way. I was like, what?
Yeah, I started watching, and I think I was like, there are better ways to spend my time.
I mean, I like to think that, like, you know, I'm all open-minded, and I can get, you know, when it comes to comedy, I get it. You know, I'm a very brilliant man. But Leo, I watched that and I was like, "Hey,
yeah,
this is over. This is too heady, man."
Yeah,
and I listened to Talking Heads, and I'm pretty artsy, but yeah, that was like, oof, I don't know if I can get behind this.
But I would like to see RDJ come back to host.
Yeah,
that would be fun.
I feel like he. I mean, now you know, once this wraps up the end game and whatnot, he might have some free time. And
could be.
I would love to see him in a SNL sketch or two.
Yeah, I mean, because it's been going on 2 decades since he's been there, right?
Yeah, 96.
Oh, over 2 decades. Okay.
Yeah, 96 and yeah.
Yeah, so.
I was doing the math in my head.
You're overdue, RDJ.
Yeah, yeah. So RDJ, get on it. Call him.
So next, you want to do Chris Hemsworth?
Let's do the Hems.
Hemsworth.
Chrissy Hems.
He's a pretty, pretty man.
He's a gorgeous, beautiful, sculpted just Adonis.
Yep.
Beautiful eyes, taut pouty lips,
mm-hmm.
fine abs, taut buttocks.
Do you need a minute?
What? No, I'm
fine. Okay.
I'm fine. Is this mic on still?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh.
Yep. Still on.
Hot mic.
So he's hosted twice in March and December of 2015. So
yes.
Yeah, his first hosting gig went very well, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I watched both of his monologues.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, his first monologue, he brought out his other Hemsworth brothers, Liam and the other one. I think Leppo is the other Hemsworth brother.
It's Harpo.
Harpo.
Show
Harpo.
Some respect.
Okay, okay. And then they had Keenan come out as the fourth Hemsworth brother. And I don't remember his name. And then Kate McKinnon came out as the Hemsworth mother. But yeah, they were the joke, and it was Keenan in a blonde wig, so he looks like the other Hemsworths.
Like Californians.
Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah, kinda like that.
Okay.
I'll
try not to mention the Californians again.
Yeah, I think he did do a Californian sketch, and I was like, no, there's no way. We don't like the Californians.
We
guys.
Don't. That actually might come up a little bit later, but we'll
does it have to?
Anyway,
no. and then like his second monologue, it was Hemsworth roughing up all the
the SNL cast members.
Oh, wow.
Just, he was like, oh, yeah, I feel very at home here. I feel like I'm roughhousing with my brothers back in Australia. And then joke is he's like going around backstage and he's like punching people and giving them surprise shots to the nuts and stuff like that.
As you do.
And yeah, so.
Okay.
But it was fun. Hemsworth. Good host.
Yeah. All right. So as far as sketches go, what were some of your standouts? There's one I think I remember you mentioned that you liked quite a bit.
There's one called Avengers News Report.
Oh, that's okay.
That was an Avengers related one where he plays Thor.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're celebrating because they just defeated
Ultron.
Ultron or the Chitauri, I forget which.
I believe it was Ultron.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and then it was like basically the newscaster in news reporter interviewing everybody. It's sort of like a post Super Bowl type of vibe.
Right. They dump a barrel of Gatorade on top of Nick Fury.
Yes, exactly.
Jay Farrow playing Nick Fury doing his Samuel L. Jackson impression.
Yeah, and I think Pete Davidson was the Hulk, you know, after
Banner. Yeah, Bruce Banner just transformed back.
Yeah, and he's like, "What happened? I think I ate a guy."
Yeah, you did. You did. And this was a fun sketch. I don't think it was great. I don't know if it's one for the ages, but it was entertaining.
Yeah, it was cool. You know, you see Thor like, you know, pumping his fist up in the air. It's like, yeah, we did it. You know, going to Disneyland type of stuff. It was all right.
Yeah.
Not too shabby. But one of my favorites was, well, I got two that I really liked.
Okay.
I don't know which one was in which episode, but there was one where he did an American Express commercial.
Oh, I didn't watch this one.
Tell
me about this.
All right, so it's one of those pre-taped commercials, and it's him getting out of a taxi and walking onto a movie set, because he's about to do a set, like walking in slow motion, and then there's this voiceover where they say, oh, they all said I wouldn't make it. They said I was too tall and too blonde and too beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I bounced around Hollywood for days. Yeah, stuff like, and he said, and you know, and basically it's him walking up and, you know, getting ready for a scene he's about to shoot and just talking about how beautiful he was, and people said
he's had a tough life.
Yeah, exactly. And people saying, like, when he went into audition for Thor, he almost didn't get it because people said, like, oh, I didn't want I don't want a guy who's exactly Thor. I wanted a guy like Thor.
Right, right.
And, you know, and then they saw, they never said I look cool with sunglasses, but look at this. Boom. You know, and of course, then the title comes up and it says, you know, Chris Hemsworth, Norse deity, American Express cardholder. It was a really funny one. It didn't get a lot of attention, but I thought it was really
good. That's cool. I didn't remember that one.
Yeah, I think that one's on the SNL app and the SNL website.
The one I really liked and I really remembered from both of his hosting times, he did this each time he hosted, they did a Disney show
called
Brother to Brother.
Right.
Where Chris Hemsworth and Taron Killam play identical twin brothers.
Right.
Like, I think Zach and Cody, Sweet Life of Zach and Cody, were twins.
There's like
on
a
the
thing
Disney
on that. I'll play on that.
Channel. So they're both in like bleach blonde wigs and dressed exactly the same.
Right.
And they get into wacky hijinks. They decide to switch places. Like one's taking the algebra test for the other.
Yeah.
And Taron Killam comes in. He's like, oh, I'm not Maddie. I'm Mikey. Nobody buys him as Chris Hemsworth's twin. They're like, no, you don't look anything like him. He's much more muscular. He's got like, you know, these big arms and like triceps and he's got the V going.
And like your body's like more flabby, like an O.
And
you're like an O-shaped stomach.
He's very tan. You're very pale and white.
Yeah.
He's got the big pecs.
Yeah.
And he looks healthy and he's got the defined cheekbones and the strong jawline.
Yeah.
Your chin just sort of vanishes into your neck and your cheeks are much more flab. And it's going into all this detail about how Taron Killam is less attractive than Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, and of course, at the first, Killam's like, oh, I guess you got me. But then as they go more and more into detail about how terrible his body is compared to his twin brother's body, he looks more and more defeated and more sad until he bursts out and says, yeah, my dick's bigger.
And then he's like, no, it's not.
And then I'm surprised they said that. I didn't know you could say your dick's bigger on SNL.
I think late night you can get away with more stuff.
All right. I thought it was like a thing where like you can call somebody a dick, but you can't refer to your genitalia.
I mean, maybe they negotiated with Standards and Practices, and they said, "Okay, you can have one dick."
Yeah,
and they were like, "We will take that dick,
oh,
and
God.
We will use that dick."
Oh my God!
In our comedy sketch.
Oh, good heavens! Oh, this got naughty.
But yeah, and then they did that again the second time he hosted, where Hemsworth was on the wrestling team.
Yes,
and Killam comes in and he tries to pass himself off, and once again, it's just. Viciously, yeah.
Like your body's flabby, and there's yeah. like you know, you have like dark arms on your hair, whereas your brother's arms are smooth, and you have like hair on your feet,
right?
Whereas your brother has perfect feet, and then like your chin is all weak, but like your brother has like a strong chin, like yeah. they just go on and on and on about how his body is just terrible.
And at the end, it flashes created by Taron Killam, not written by Taron Killam. very funny sketch, I enjoyed that. If Hemsworth.
I think at the end of that sketch, mm-hmm. he bursts out and says, "Well, my brother tried to kiss me, yes. and I was trying when I was sleeping," and everybody's like, "What?"
It's like I tried to kiss him,
and then he cries, and then yeah. that's the end of the sketch.
Yeah,
it's a good sketch.
It was a funny sketch. I
Taron Killam.
I miss Taron Killam.
Yeah, you don't know what you got till it's gone.
Mm.
He was a strong.
No, I enjoyed him. I appreciated him fully when he was on the show, but
I
wish he'd stuck around a little longer.
Yeah, I know. He was good in the clutch.
A very versatile guy, and yeah, he was good. There was one other Hemsworth sketch that I rewatched, which is called Brunch. Where
yes.
we had, did you rewatch this one?
Yes, I did.
And it was a group of ladies. We had Cicely, Adi, Kate, and who was the fourth one? Vanessa Bayer,
yes,
I think.
Yes, back when Bayer was on.
Yeah, and so they're all out at lunch, and they're talking about the various actors that they find cute, and Hemsworth is there in a dress and drag as their friend Claire, and he's like, right. Well, what about Chris Hemsworth? He's really hot,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, very much.
And then as he goes off to the bathroom, the ladies start discussing, they're like, guys, it's our friend Claire, Chris Hemsworth in drag. And they're talking about more, and they're like, you know what, now that I think of it, we haven't known Claire for years. I think I just met her today. and it's just slowly dawning on them that it's really Chris Hemsworth just trying to get women to talk about how hot he is.
Yeah, and Chris Hemsworth just keeps calling them bitches. Like, hey, what's up, bitches? You think Chris Hemsworth's hot, you bitches? Oh, we're such bitches. And it's like, we don't really call each other bitches.
Okay, bitches. And then at the end, they get him to confess that he is actually Chris Hemsworth. He takes off the wig, and he's like, yeah, I was feeling a little insecure because there are all these other hunks who've come up behind me, and
yeah.
I just want to make sure that women still like me. And do you still like me? And Cecily's like, oh, yes, we do. And Adi's just like, no, this was weird, and you're a bad person.
Fade to black. It just cuts right off right there.
And I loved that. I love that it just ended right after that. That was great.
Yeah. Sometimes abrupt endings, I mean, I've been on record on the podcast saying sometimes abrupt endings are just like, what? Jarring. But that was an abrupt ending.
It really worked.
Yes.
It really worked. Yeah.
Absolutely. That was a good.
So that sketch was better than I remembered.
Yeah, yeah. Chris Hemsworth, he's got comedy chops.
He does. I look forward to seeing him in more stuff.
Yeah, yeah. He's a funny fella.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right. So next up, what do we got? Who do we got?
Scarlett Johansson.
ScarJo.
Black Widow. Natasha Romanoff.
Yeah. I was trying to think of her other aliases, but I think that's it.
She was Natalie Rushman in Iron Man 2.
Whoa.
When she was undercover at Stark Enterprises.
I didn't. That is.
And she replaced Pepper Potts as Tony Stark's personal assistant.
I
but
yield.
Then halfway through the movie, he finds out that she's actually a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And whoa.
All right.
Sparks fly.
The sparks fly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I yield. That was. Oof. All right. So, yeah, she hosted five times. January of 06, April of 07, November 2010, May 2015, and March 2017.
Wow.
Yeah, she's up to, and she's good too. She's a great little actress there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, one of my favorites was the Complicit pre-tape commercial
where she plays Ivanka Trump.
Yes, it's basically like a perfume commercial. She dresses up as Ivanka Trump and goes into this big fancy party. It's like she needs a fancy lady needs a fancy fragrance.
Complicit.
She's complicit. And like, while everybody in the party is kind of like trying to hide their face from her and don't want to be seen with her, the
complicit.
Whole thing, she's complicit. It's like, oh, she's the type of girl who watches Titanic and thinks she's Rose. But no, bitch, you're Billy Zane.
Complicit.
And I thought that was a funny.
Yeah, that was a funny sketch. I remember that. And you know, making the good point that you like to think that Ivanka is maybe the acceptable face of the Trump administration, but no, she's a horrible person as well.
Yeah, like, oh, she's a feminist. She fights for female rights, but like how?
Yeah.
Complicit. And that's one I really dug. The dog translator sketch.
Oh, I love that one. I didn't rewatch that one, but I remember it well.
It was
that
a good one.
Where she's a scientist and she's invented this device that gives her the ability to hear her dog's thoughts.
Right. She brought her dog in.
And then and it's this adorable little pug.
Yeah.
And she discovers to her horror that her dog is a Trump supporter.
Yeah, a lot of Trump sketches in these. So basically she's demonstrating her machine in front of her colleagues and her dog is, you know, it works. And her dog mm-hmm. says, you know, I like that Trump guy. It's got some good ideas.
Yeah, and this is all voiceover over shots of the dog. And it's adorable. At one point, the dog, like, gets the headphones off his head.
Yeah, of course, I think the voice, it sounded like it was Beck, but he was like, the stupid helmet.
Yeah.
He has to, you know, play along with it. And
it's live TV, you're working with animals, you just got to roll with whatever happens. And Scarlett gets the headphone thing back on, the helmet back on.
Yeah, and of course, like, Scarlett's very apologetic for her Trump-loving dog, and it's like, what do you know? You're just a dog. You just, you know, you look behind and pee outdoors all day, and then the dog's like, well, yeah, you masturbate out of boredom. Like, what is it? What does that have to do with this? Like, it's like, I can't talk to you liberals. And it gets, I like that sketch quite a bit.
I enjoy it whenever they do a sketch with a live dog. I think that's just fun. They also did one where they had the dog with human hands.
Oh, yeah! And,
I can't remember. Was that another one that Scarlett hosted?
It might have been.
A year or two ago, and I just vaguely remember because I didn't rewatch it for this episode, but that was hilarious, too. I mean, more live dogs on SNL. That is what I'm saying.
More live dogs. That's what we're saying right here.
I want to see more doggies on SNL.
Yes.
But
if you did an all-dog episode, we would not be mad at that.
No, I would be so there for that.
Ratings bonanza. That's all we're saying, guys.
Just dog in every sketch. That is my mantra. And
a chicken in every pot, a dog in every sketch.
Exactly. But the big one for Scarlett that we should talk about was where they did a parody of, because for a long, long time, Marvel was not making a solo Black Widow movie. They've announced that they finally are going to be doing that.
Yeah, it's getting off the ground.
Mm-hmm. I don't know when it's going to be shooting. They haven't announced a release date, but they've said a few people who are going to be in it.
Yeah, I think it's going to start shooting soon.
I think so. But it's like Marvel's keeping this very tightly under wraps after Endgame comes out. We'll probably find out more about this at San Diego Comic-Con, I would guess.
Oh, yeah.
This summer. That's when they usually make the big O. Big announcements.
Say the big O?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's what, you have all the fangasms when they announce this stuff.
Okay.
But
like
so,
Black Widow. Oh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I had to say. We're all thinking it.
But SNL did a nice parody. The Scarlett Johansson, when she was there, I believe, to promote Age of Ultron, they did a parody of a Black Widow solo movie, but the joke was they did it as a chick flick.
Yes.
Because Marvel gets women.
Rom-com.
And so it was like, for Marvel Studios and the writers of 27 Dresses.
Yeah.
And so it's Scarlett as a Black Widow, as a single girl in the city, and she's wearing her Black Widow jumpsuit with like a pink sweater over it.
She's running down the sidewalk as women do in rom-coms, and she breaks a heel.
As women do in rom-coms. She gets caught up in the dog leashes, and she has a meet-cute with Ultron.
Exactly. And of course, she works at a magazine, as all women do in rom-coms.
A fashion magazine. Kate McKinnon is her bitchy boss.
Yeah.
So she has this romance with Ultron, which is hampered by the fact that he's a murderous killer robot.
Right.
And he like throws a truck into her office building.
Right.
And then he writes "I'm sorry" in flames across the city.
It's like, you don't even know what my favorite ice cream flavor is, dude. Heck.
Is your favorite food pizza?
Get out of here.
Taron Killam is Thor.
As Thor, the gay best friend.
The gay best friend who's like, girl, you've got it bad. You're putting ketchup on your cereal.
Ugh, It hits a lot of the beats.
And Bobby Moynihan as the Hulk, who is like the friend who's really the good romantic match for her that she's been ignoring all this time.
And, yeah.
And
because they put that in, that's in Ultron.
And they have an impressive looking Hulk suit for Bobby Moynihan.
Yeah, there's a few.
They put him in this muscle suit that's like, you know, big and green, muscular and veiny. And
yeah,
and
I mean, I'm pretty sure it's the same suit that they used when Renner hosted and it did that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, they're getting their money's worth out of that thing because that had to cost them something.
Yeah, oh, pretty penny.
This is a cute. I think it's one of the better Marvel parodies they've done.
I do too. It's a nod to the Marvel movies and a little bit of a dig to the, you know, formulaic rom-coms.
Yeah, yeah, and it's also just like making a joke out of Marvel taking so damn long to make a Black Widow movie.
Yeah.
I don't get that either. I don't get why it took so long.
I don't know.
She's a popular actress. She's proved she can open a movie. And
I mean,
it seems like a no-brainer. I don't know why it took 8-9 years for them to...
Because we got to get a talking raccoon and talking tree movie out first, man.
I guess so, yeah. Just forever they were saying like, oh yeah, women don't open movies. And it's like, well, no, you were just making crap movies.
Yeah.
If you make a good movie with a woman in the lead, people will show up for it.
It's Marvel. People will come just based on the name alone.
I mean, yeah, Captain Marvel's made $1 billion now. So hopefully that nonsense is over with.
Yeah. Here. Another sketch I really liked. Did you see the one, there's like a sketch for women?
I don't remember this one.
It seemed like it was a Kyle and Beck sketch,
mm-hmm.
where basically it starts off with A.D. Bryan and Scarlett Johansson talking to the camera saying, hey, you know, we were out because it was a day without Women's Day.
Oh, yes.
So we were, you know, we weren't here for this one sketch, but, you know, Kyle and Beck came in and wrote it for us, and mm-hmm. you know, we hope you enjoy it. And then you go to the sketch, and then it's Kyle and Beck and Scarlett and A.D., and Kyle and Beck are talking about women, you know, it's like, you know, women have these issues. It's crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And while they're talking about how tough it is to be a woman and the issues women have, Scarlett and A.D. are just sitting there silently. They don't have any lines.
They can't get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, they don't have any lines. They just say, that's right.
Right.
And then Kyle and Beck are talking back and forth about, you know, it's crazy with women. And then there's one point where Kyle says, you know, how crazy it is. I bet all these women over here have like a story to tell, but guys just don't want to listen. And they just, he walks to the other table behind them, and it's literally all the female cast members of Saturday Night Live. And it's like, all these women have a story to tell, but guys just don't want to listen. It's crazy, right? And then he goes back and sits down, and none of the other cast members have any lines.
That's great.
That's
a great parody.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a play on that that Black History Month thing where the two of them were talking and none of the black cast members said anything.
Yes, yeah, that was
good. That's a great sketch if you could find it. I think that's on YouTube. But
okay.
Basically, check
that one out again. I do remember that one now that you've described it. And
just that one scene where he walks through like literally all the other female cast members and none of them have a line at all. And he just walks back.
That's great.
I get a kick out of it.
That's great.
And for some reason,
women not being allowed to talk.
Oh, Lordy Lou. And for some reason, they go by the names Ace and Jake. I don't know why. It's like, hey, Ace, you look troubled.
That's just a funny random detail. I enjoy that.
Oh, so yeah, so that's those are our ScarJo picks.
Okay. So who next? We got Jeremy Renner. We got Samuel L. Jackson. Who should we?
Let's go Sammy Jack.
Okay. All right. Samuel L. Jackson, he hosted in 1998, you said,
yes,
right?
Yes, 1998.
Yes, I watched the monologue for that where it was the first show of 1998. This was season 23, mm-hmm. and he came out. He clarified, he says, I am not Lawrence Fishburne or Morgan Freeman.
Because that has happened where he's been confused.
There's an interview that you can find online, I'm sure, where the interviewer is asking Samuel L. Jackson questions, and he has to point out to the interview, you know I'm not Lawrence Fishburne, right?
Oh.
And it is so wonderfully awkward.
I mean, I want to believe that was done as a joke, like he meant it as like a... But no, he
did,
really
did. Did he walk out on that interview?
He did. I think he had fun with it. Like, I think Samuel Jackson's like the type of guy...
It was like a remote.
No, right? I think he was there.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I believe he was there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like one of the things where like Sam, like he doesn't get mad and flustered and leave. He'll sit there and like look at you in the eye and watch you squirm.
Right.
While you like,
because he's an intimidating man.
He is. He don't mess around. He robbed that McDowell's in Coming to America.
That's right. And then Eddie Murphy took him out with his cool judo moves.
Yeah.
With his mop stick.
With his mop stick. And then, Arsenio Hall had his gun on him and said, "Freeze, you diseased bag of rhinoceros pizzle."
Nice.
I believe that's
nice.
It.
That's some.
No, "freeze, you diseased rhinoceros pizzle."
That's some grade A trash talk right there.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
That's good stuff.
We got to bring that back.
That's right. So in the monologue, because it was the first show of 1998, Samuel L. Jackson gave his New Year's resolutions. And they were the band behind him was playing like a theme to Shaft or something that sounded very much
yes.
like the theme to Shaft. Because I think this was around the time that Samuel L. Jackson did his own Shaft movie.
No, I think that came out in 2000.
Okay.
He's just always evoked the essence of Shaft.
That's so weird.
You're talking about the Shaq remake with Shaft remake. I think John Singleton directed it.
Yes.
And it had like Christian Bale before he was
the villain.
Yeah,
and Samuel L. Jackson at one point says, "It's my duty to please that booty."
Yes, that's his.
I never
line.
Saw the movie. I just remember that line from the trailer.
That was in the trailer.
It had to be because I never saw the movie.
Wow. All right. So,
did you see that Shaft?
I did see that. I did see that Shaft. Jeez,
that Lord. Version of the movie Shaft.
Which we're children. We're yeah, just children.
We are.
Yeah, I saw it. It was all right. Jeffrey Wright was good in it as People's Hernandez.
Okay.
And, but as far as the movie goes, it was,
I mean, they never made a sequel to it, so it couldn't have been that successful.
No,
but they're doing another Shaft movie.
They are doing another one where it's like three generations. It's like the original Shaft.
Richard Roundtree.
Samuel Jackson is his Shaft, and then he has like a son, Shaft.
Who's the new Shaft?
Some kid.
Some dude.
Yeah, some random dude, okay. Shaft Jr.,
all right.
So it's like three generations of Shaft.
Wouldn't he be Shaft the third?
I guess so.
Because like Samuel Jackson was like the nephew of the original Shaft, of Richard Roundtree Shaft.
He was, yeah.
Okay.
And then I guess, but I think this is his son. So
right.
It's like, I think it's just called Shaft too. It's not like Shaft
right.
2000 or nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
It'd be
yeah.
weird if it was Shaft 2000 because it's like 2019 now.
So yeah.
Like, wow, this takes place 20 years ago. Okay.
Yeah, it's a period piece. Yeah, John Shaft Jr., blah, blah, blah.
So he's the son of Samuel L. Jackson's Shaft.
Yes.
Okay. So, but he's still a private dick who's a sex machine to all the chicks.
Shit, yeah. He is a complicated man.
I can dig
man.
It.
He's a complicated man. No one understands him but his woman.
Oh, okay. God, that song is so good.
Jesse T. Usher. Who was also in the Independence Day remake.
Okay.
Almost
the one who played like Will Smith's son?
Yeah.
Okay.
Almost Christmas. That's all I got.
Okay.
and others.
Well, anyway, they were playing music behind Samuel L. Jackson that sounds very much like the theme to Shaft.
Yes.
And he's giving his New Year's resolutions for 1998. He said his resolutions are to continue to kick ass, to build a shrine to my own badass, to stick it to the suckers, and I'm going to take a computer class.
Oh,
so,
all right.
Yeah, so it's nice. A little Samuel L. Jackson self-improvement.
Yeah, that computer class, I hope that paid off.
I mean, he runs the whole helicarrier, so obviously.
That's true.
Yeah, he learned some stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's so, true. He does do that. I thought Maria Hill did that, but I guess he...
Well, I mean, he has to know the jobs of his subordinates.
Gotcha.
I mean, he didn't notice that guy playing Galaga, but...
He didn't think we'd notice, but we did. That was a deep dive, people.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't watch many Samuel L. Jackson sketches, but I did make a point of rewatching one. And this was just when he had a cameo on a show that Martin Short hosted.
Oh, okay.
When they did, this was season 38 in 2012, where they did BET's What's Up With
What
That.
What Up With Any... Dude, I watched that sketch, and... It's weird. I've said on the podcast before, I always bemoan when they do like a sketch where it's like a retread of exactly what they've done before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like a sketch where they hit the same beats and do the same thing and it's nothing really different.
Right.
But for some reason, with What Up With That,
mm-hmm.
they do basically the same thing every time, and I love it. I don't understand why. I don't know why.
It's so stupid. You've got to love it. You've just got to surrender to... It's wonderful stupidity.
Like, I saw Jason Sudeikis dance in a red tracksuit.
Doing the running man.
In three or four different sketches. And I smile like an idiot every time.
And Sudeikis has some dance moves.
He does.
He does. And I also love, this is just like a subtle thing that he does, or just a little thing that he does. Whenever they stop the What's Up With That song, and if you're not familiar with the sketch, it's Kenan Thompson, he's playing the host. I wrote down the host's name. DeAndre Cole, and he's starting the show, but he starts it out with the big theme song going, you know, what's up with that? And then and Jason Sudeikis is like dancing in the red tracksuit behind him, and whenever they stop the song, Jason Sudeikis crosses really wide to walk off stage. He like walks to the middle of the stage and then just loops around.
Yeah, he does like, it's like a George Jefferson type of strut.
Yeah, and it's hilarious. And then we have the other cast members. We've got like some of the ladies. They're doing the backup singing behind him. We got Fred Armisen playing the saxophone.
Right.
And he looks eerily like Zoot from the Muppet Show.
Very much so.
I don't know if that was intentional or just a happy coincidence.
I feel like it might be like a Kenny G nod, but it could be a Zoot.
Yeah, yeah. Or it could be both things. Who knows?
Could be both things rolled up in one.
And they always have like these two celebrity cameos.
Right.
And the joke is that Keenan, he gets so caught up in doing, reviving the theme song over and over and over, he never gets to his guest. And the third guest is always Bill Hader as Lindsey Buckingham.
I don't know why they chose Lindsey Buckingham out of all people.
It's so wonderfully random. And Bill Hader never says a fucking word.
Yeah.
And he's hilarious. He's just, I mean, he's...
It's a thing of beauty.
Yeah, and it's
and, like,
great.
They never get around to interviewing the other guests, usually.
No.
Like, usually, like, maybe one person will say something, one of the other guests, but then the other person won't say anything.
Yeah.
Like, they had James Franco on as one of the guests, who wasn't the host of the show.
No,
he was
just
there.
Just a random cameo.
And he didn't say a word throughout the whole sketch.
They did one where the two other guests were Bill O'Reilly and Kate Upton.
How random is that?
and in this one with Samuel Jackson, it's Samuel Jackson and Carrie Brownstein from Portlandia.
Yes.
Who, you know, she's buddies with Fred Armisen, so I'm sure that's how that happened.
Member of the band Slater Kinney?
Yeah, yes. And Samuel L. Jackson did get a few lines in, and he, of course, is really pissed that DeAndre Cole didn't get to him.
Right.
And he's like, at the end, he straight up drops an F-bomb. He's just like, hey, man, fuck you. And he goes, this is bullshit. And Keenan has a great improv. He's just like, hey Sam, that costs money.
Yeah, exactly. And then he said, and then I think Keenan was like, and thanks to our guest Carrie Brownstein. And then Carrie Brownstein made the motion like I'll zip my lip.
Yes.
I won't say anything. It was a beautiful thing. For that sketch always gets me. They do the same thing, but I laugh and smile like a fool.
And this one was a Christmas sketch. So they had all sorts of Christmas themed. And each time he revives the theme song, it gets more and more elaborate. You have more walk-ons and things.
Right.
We had Tiny Tim from Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, who suddenly gets healed from his handicap, and he starts breakdancing.
Right.
We had Nassim Pedrad as Grinchina, the female Grinch, who comes out in a Santa suit, and she's dancing.
Sashaying all the way.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. If this is truly like Kenan Thompson's last season, I would really love one last What's Up With That sketch.
If they could do like a 15-minute What's Up With That sketch.
And this is a long sketch. The Samuel Jackson one, it's like 8 minutes. That's a huge chunk of the show.
Yeah, it's a stretch, but I can't explain it, why that sketch works every time and why it makes me smile all the time.
But the joke is just basically that it goes on for way too long, and you just have to surrender to it and just enjoy it.
It's a thing of beauty, people. It's
great.
Okay. All right, well, I did watch a couple of sketches. There weren't too many Samuel Jackson sketches from when he hosted, but the one I saw that I liked when they did an interview. It was like one of those Bravo behind-the-scenes type of show, and they interviewed Quentin Tarantino. But it was Norm Macdonald doing a Quentin Tarantino impression.
Interesting.
It was pretty good. He was like, all right, see, the thing about Pulp Fiction, man, you know, okay?
Right.
Like, I was trying to, like, I got, like, Samuel Jackson, man. And he was good, okay? He was good as Jewel, but I needed, like, a Vincent, man. Like, I needed somebody strong, man. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's basically them showing sort of behind-the-scenes auditions they did for other people to play Vincent.
It's a good go-to
in Pulp
for
Fiction.
SNL.
Exactly.
All right.
And so at first they show... The show, Daryl Hammond doing a Jerry Mathers from Leave It to Beaver.
Mm-hmm.
And, then it goes back into Norm Macdonald doing his Tarantino impression. It's like, all right, from Leave It to Beaver, he was good, man, but we need somebody better. We need, like, the king, man. And so then it has Norm Macdonald trying as he was doing his Burt Reynolds impression, you know, trying out for... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then they'll do, like, it was him and Samuel Jackson doing the quarter pound with cheese, Royale with cheese line.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, hey, Tarantino, it's all about burgers. What's going on here? And then it went into, what did it go into? Oh, it had Ambie Davis, played by
Alice from the Brady Bunch.
Alice from the Brady Bunch. She was auditioning.
Who was playing Ambie Davis?
Anna Gasteyer.
Oh, okay.
And then they also had Walter Cronkite was auditioning to play the Gimp.
Daryl Hammond is Cronkite?
Daryl Hammond is Cronkite.
That seems like a Daryl Hammond impression. Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty much.
I can't imagine anybody else, in that era doing a Cronkite.
Who else is going to fill those Cronkite shoes?
That's right.
And yeah, I mean, the sketch was all right. I mean, it mostly hinged on Norm MacDonald's really good Quentin Tarantino impression.
Interesting.
And of course, they made fun of the fact that Quentin Tarantino has a big head in a few things. And yeah, that was pretty much it. And there was like another sketch that they had where it was like the publisher's clearinghouse sweepstakes dropping off a big check to this black family in the projects mm-hmm. in Brooklyn. And of course, you know, it's just like, you know, oh, you've won. And, you know, it's full of people and, you know, it's a very dangerous neighborhood.
Ah.
Sadly. So, you know, one of the publisher's clearinghouse people gets attacked by like one of the dogs and whatnot. It was all
okay.
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, it did have Samuel Jackson dropped an N-bomb on it, so that was interesting.
Like uncensored?
Yeah, I mean, from what I heard, I heard it.
Okay.
I think it was like with an A, not a hard R.
Oh, but yeah. I guess that's considered more acceptable, right?
I don't think you could do either one now, but I guess back in 98, they let that fly.
I'm just now remembering the old Patrice O'Neill line where he's saying, like, I had a joke where the punchline was N-word in a Volkswagen, and they looped out Volkswagen.
What was that for? What?
This is some interview with Patrice O'Neill. The late, great Patrice O'Neill.
Yeah, rest in peace. I mean, I still remember, like, when they let the N-word go, when Will Ferrell did that Robert Goulet impression. Do you remember that?
I don't remember him dropping an N-bomb.
No. He did. There was one. Wow. There was one. You gotta. It's tough to find. They probably got rid of it, but it's basically like Robert Goulet. It was like a commercial where he was doing his. He was like selling an album full of covers he did, and it was like a covers of hip hop and rap songs.
Okay,
and then he goes, "All right, you listen to me do the thong song. Oh, girl, you know that dress is so scandalous, and you know another." And he says it. Can't handle it. You got dumps like a truck. Hey, that's like what? She bop, she boop. It's a thong song.
Wow.
And then he sings Big Papa by Notorious B.I.G. and he says it again. He drops an N-bomb. I was like, wow.
Like I said before, you can get away with a lot late night.
You can. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it back then when I was like, wow, they let that go. But it was a different time, a different era.
All right, our next theme show, the N-word on SNL.
N-word.
We'll just talk about all the N-word sketches they've done over the years.
We'll do it on Black History Month next year.
Yes.
Eee.
So is that everything on Samuel L.
Yeah, that's
L.
all
Jackson?
I had. That's all
right,
all I had.
And our last person, Mr. Jeremy Renner, Hawkeye, his own bad self.
Audition. He hosted November 2012.
Okay.
And
it's a ways back.
It's a ways back. And yeah, this is like around when the first Avengers movie came out, I believe.
Yeah, that came out in 2012.
All right, now you heard some things about when he hosted that it didn't go over
smoothly. Remember, I didn't look up, I don't think his monologue is online because there was like some sort of technical screw up. He comes out and he was playing the piano as Jeremy Renner does. I've seen him play the piano in other places and he was like singing a song and there was some sort of sound problem. And then he just stopped abruptly and he was like, "What? Are we okay? Are we doing?" And he just, it was very awkward because he just, they had some sort of technical screw up with the sound and he just did not really roll with it. So it was just like, it got the evening off to a weird, weird start.
Guys, that seemed to have gone into the rest of the show too, a little bit.
He was kind of an awkward host. The one sketch that I made a point of looking up and rewatching was the, Hawkeye disappoints the Avengers.
Yeah, that's the only one I could find. I mean, there was another one, but I watched it. I was like, I don't know if I want to talk about this one.
And the joke here was it's the finale of the first Avengers movie. They're all fighting the alien Chitauri invasion in the middle of Manhattan. And Jeremy Renner, of course, is playing Hawkeye. And he's like, well, I only had 12 arrows in my quiver. I think he calls it an arrow thing. He doesn't even know the word quiver. He's like,
he called it arrow thing?
Yeah. He's like, I only had 12 arrows in my arrow thing. And so I'm out of arrows. So I'm going to go. And they're like, Hawkeye, there are millions of aliens around here. And he's like, yeah, and I took out 12 of them. You're welcome.
Yeah.
And we had Jason Sudeikis as Tony Stark.
Right.
And I believe Taron Killam was playing Captain America this time.
Yeah.
And who was playing Thor? I think it was Bill Hader as Thor.
Right, Hader was Thor.
Bobby Moynihan as the Hulk.
Right, and Black Widow was Kate McKinnon.
And Kate McKinnon did a wonderful Scarlett Johansson impression, and they're like, oh, but Black Widow's not even doing anything. And she's like, didn't I? And she's just sort of posing and just taking people out sexily. And it was just a great exaggeration of what they do with Black Widow. And
yeah, it was like a high production sketch. It was like a set and everything. It was like background fighter. This seemed to be like, I don't know, a lot of money went into this sketch.
They did. I mean, I think that's why they reused the Bobby Moynihan Hulk suit later, because they probably dropped a lot of money on it. And
yeah, exactly.
And like, we got to get our money's worth out of this stuff.
Yeah, I think like Tony Stark called Hawkeye Hunger Games at one point.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's a clever quip.
He's like, I just quipped you. You got quipped.
Yeah. And he just flies away.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, the sketch as a whole was like, it's all right.
It was cute. I mean, it's... I think it's kind of low-hanging fruit, where it's like, oh, well, what's the Archer doing with the Avengers? He's so lame and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an easy kind of fanboy joke that has been around for literally decades.
Yeah, like a lot of people are just like, I remember when like the first Avengers came out, people were like, oh, you know, Tony Stark can do this, and Avenger can do, and the Hulk can do this, and, you know, Romanoff just has a gun.
Yes.
And, you know,
Hawkeye. And she has the little Black Widow stinger.
Yeah.
Things on her wrists.
Exactly. Because, like, you're basically seeing, like, all these big superheroes and are, like, taking out, you know, these huge monsters. And, you know, Hawkeye's like, pew, pew. Yeah. And, you know, Scarlett Johansson's like, bang, bang. And, you know, nerd boys like us are like, they're not even doing anything.
I Hawkeye's okay. I think Jeremy Renner's Hawkeye in the Avengers movies is probably my least favorite. Not because of anything that Renner does. It's just because the characterization of him is very different from the Hawkeye I know and love from the comics.
How is he?
Well, the Hawkeye in the comics, and I'm talking about like regular Marvel Universe, not Ultimate Universe.
Right.
Because the Jeremy Renner Hawkeye takes a little more from the Ultimate Universe, where he's like the badass assassin guy.
Gotcha.
But in the classic Marvel Universe, the mainstream Marvel Universe, Hawkeye is sort of the sarcastic underdog guy.
Huh.
And they couldn't really do that with the movie Hawkeye, because Tony Stark was the sarcastic, quippy one.
Yeah.
So they had to do something different with Hawkeye. So
right. I remember like a few people were saying that they're like, the way that they write the characters in these movies, like everybody is a little bit kind of like Tony Stark. Like
there's a lot of quipping.
Yeah, a lot of quipping. Like Spider-Man's very quippy.
Well, Spider-Man's got to be quippy.
Yeah, and even Thor's gotten more quippy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Hulk isn't really quippy. Hulk not quippy.
Yeah.
But, you know, Star-Lord's quippy. Like, yes. Even Drax is kind of quippy once in a while. Well, maybe not.
Yeah, But, I mean, Drax is funny in his own way.
Yeah, it's true. Like, everybody's very sarcastic and quippy. I'm like,
I think that's going to happen when you have Joss Whedon write the first big Avengers movie.
I guess so. But it seems to have carried over into the other Marvel movies, too.
Yeah, I mean...
No, Ant-Man's quippy-ish.
I think in a lot of cases that's just playing to people's strengths, because Robert Downey Jr. is very funny, Paul Rudd is very funny, Chris Pratt is very funny.
Okay.
You got a lot of funny people, and you should let them be funny. And you've got some funny writers, like Joss Whedon and... I'm blanking on the Guardians of the Galaxy's director's name.
Tim Gunn.
That's the fashion guy.
Tim Gunn directed Guardians of the Galaxy?
That would be awesome. I would be there for that. Wow. I would totally...
The movie was like so-so, but the costumes, my God.
They made it work.
Woo!
what's
James
the other...
Gunn.
James Gunn. Thank you. God, I don't know why that name was running out of my head, but... I would totally see a Guardians movie directed by Tim Gunn.
Now that we just put it out there, Tim Gunn.
That's who they should have had replace James Gunn if they hadn't rehired him. They just get Tim Gunn.
Gun for a gun.
In there, yeah.
Two guns.
But I think that's about everybody we're going to talk about.
Yeah, that's about it for now. But, like, guys, stay tuned for next week's episode.
Next week, we're going to talk all about the other Marvel people we didn't get to this week.
The rest.
We got the Chadwick Boseman. We got the Chris Pratt.
We got the Coop.
We got, let's see, who else do we have?
We got Cooper. We got the Cumberbatch.
We got Josh Brolin. We got Brie Larson. We got Cumberbatch. We got Martin Freeman.
Oh,
We got Bradley Cooper. We got so many people. It's a galaxy of stars.
Rudd. We got the Rudd.
We got the Paul Rudd.
Jeez Louise. We are working overtime for you people.
So
this is a lot. You're welcome, America.
And so that's going to be it for this week. I think Thanos just snapped his fingers. So one of us is going to disintegrate now. And Mr. Patterson, I don't want to go.
Oh, that's sad.
I don't want to go.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.